Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 556. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
Hello, Mitchell Fain.
Hi.
We survived the polar vortex.
Oh, the Siberia.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. We were colder than Siberia, for those of you not in Chicago. But if you're watching a television, all my friends seem to think that Chicago was like the apex of the storm. Like, they kept saying, like, oh, my God, I just keep seeing that Chicago is so bad. But poor Michigan was bad. Poor Wisconsin was bad.
Iowa
was bad.
It was bad.
It was super cold. And you had to leave the house because you're in rehearsals for your big cruise.
Every day.
I mean, and I couldn't believe it. I was so worried about you. I felt like such a mother. I felt like a Jewish mother.
Goodness.
I was like, wrap yourself up. I'll have some hot chili and soup for you when you get home.
It was so, I know, we did have chili.
I was like, I'm opening the door. Tell me when you're 10 paces from the door.
It was really.
It was scary.
It was scary.
Apocalyptically scary.
I mean, luckily I have really awesome boots.
Yeah.
Because, you know, also there was so much snow and it all got icy and. It was just treacherous. And
yeah.
More than anything, it was exhausted. For those people who are my Facebook friends or my Instagram friends, stuff like that, I had this crazy day where, I bundled up, right? Because it was like -51.
Day one.
Yeah.
The first day you had to go out,
God.
On Monday or something.
Yes. But then on Tuesday, which was just as cold, I bundled
minus
up.
-20.
So that I wasn't cold, you know, for too long at the bus stop. Because I'd take a bus down to Second City.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I got on the bus, and because of when I left, it was rush hour. Ugh. And it was so crowded. So then you get overheated.
Mm.
And then I'm getting nauseous, and the driver was driving very erratically because people were driving crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And people are on you, and this bad breath. And the bus was so slow that despite the fact that I gave myself an extra half an hour to get to work,
mm-hmm.
I was going to be late. Mm-hmm. And I was going to be late without ever having had breakfast or coffee because I was like, I got to get on the bus right now.
Mm.
And it took so long, almost mm-hmm. twice as long to get down mm-hmm. to Second City than it usually takes,
mm-hmm.
That on the bus I began to sob openly, like a crazy person.
Yeah.
Sobbing.
I'm telling you, comedy is not for wimps. You were the only person I knew who
had
went to work on Monday.
I swear to God, I don't even know
like,
why we did.
I was like, comedy is not for wimps because literally I had an appointment with an attorney, canceled. I had a call with an accountant, canceled. Every ad agency, I do believe in communication with some with Steppenwolf Theater that a couple people may have gone in, but like theaters closed, you know, like
schools closed.
Schools closed, churches closed. Like I had a meeting that was going to be in a church that night and it was closed. The church was closed so the meeting couldn't happen, you know. It's just like everything was closed. And here's
Except
my little
City.
Mitchell like going out to Second City to practice to be on the Caribbean boat.
I know.
Like you guys have the skin, you know. You're about
And you know what was terrible too was that it was cold in the building.
Ugh.
Because they don't have the best regulation.
How can you heat up? I couldn't heat this. I mean, luckily you're in the little nook, so you were probably nice and toasty warm.
Inside, I was cozy. I never wanted to leave.
It's a little, like, my front door is just exposed to the elements, and it's real near my living room. And so I, like, had all these towels and rags, like, all around the rim of my door frame.
I know.
And,
your door looked like it was going to do the dance of Scheherazade or something.
It was totally this dance of the seven veils. I had, like, bubble wrap because it was like, how do you make your light switches not be so cold? So I was, like, putting bubble wrap over them. Some of them are still here. I mean, it was cold. And Here's how you know it's cold, because my dog is a love and she's a snow dog. Like, she thinks Christmas whenever it snows. Her favorite thing is after a really warm night of sleeping in her cozy little bed is to run downstairs, run outside, pee, and then roll like a polar bear in the snow. Like, it's her happiest, blissful moment. Well, she went out the first day and, like, bounded out in the snow, which she does because it's so much fun. Bounds out in 2 feet of snow in the backyard and then comes out on the sidewalk, which was the only area I had shoveled, and literally, like, starts walking to me and just crumbles to her elbows.
She buckled?
Like, she just buckled, like, what just hit me?
Aww.
And it was like minus 36 just hit you, sweetie. Like, even for
paws,
her dog. Yeah, like her paws, and she had just gotten so wet, you know, and that was just heartbreaking. So me and you, we were watching Captain Phillips one night for the SAGs, and I had to fashion little plastic baggies with washcloths in them around Nilla's ankles, because, I mean, she doesn't need booties. I mean, she's not like a little tiny yip-yip dog that the cold
but she
affects
them. You needed to not have the pads of her paws.
Yes, so she could poop, because she could stay out there for like 90 seconds, but that's not a lot. You know, we all know that's probably not long enough to poop.
Something like me. I mean, Nilla is a lady, but boys like to take their time.
Right, so she was so happy that I fashioned those little... A little
embarrassed,
and you gave her dignity, and you left the room.
I did. I was like, "Why are you doing this? I don't think Nilla wants me to watch her getting booties put on her feet."
But really, I mean, that is something about the heart of Chicago and the Midwest, is that we survive things like that damn polar vortex.
I mean,
it was worse to me than the blizzard of '98, and I wasn't here for the last blizzard.
I wasn't here for the last blizzard, but when I was a kid, there's a very famous blizzard that anyone who grew up in New England, particularly Rhode Island, remember the blizzard of 78.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the state of Rhode Island shut down for like a week. And I know personally my street was a dead end and only had houses on one side of it growing up. And it was a fairly new street and it wasn't on some city maps. So they plowed our street in, and they literally built a wall of snow blocking off the end of my street about the size of a two-story house.
Oh, my gosh.
So my street particularly...
How terrifying.
It was terrifying. So we could barely get out to get stuff. We, like, had to take sleds. Like, we had to turn it into, like, a sledding hill.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and then there was an ice storm right after.
Ice storms are bad. Ice storms are as bad as like what I feel.
So
like the
trees
polar vortex
were falling right because the branches
that happened in Memphis when I lived in Memphis.
But surviving it, the point that you're making, I think, is cool. Is that the survival of it?
Yeah, it's
becomes
just the heart, and like all of us, we kind of get through to the other side, and that's an amazing thing. Big theme tonight is Golden Globe night, as you called it, the Super Bowls for the gays.
Yeah.
Besides the intermission.
Yeah, it's like the playoffs, right? The award season is like the playoffs. The Oscars is like the big night, the Super Bowl, the World Series. But the SAGs, the Golden Globes, the People's Choice, all those, they're like, it's like the playoffs.
It's like the playoffs.
We're getting
for
close,
us.
Right? We're trying to figure out. We're trying to make our bets. We're trying to see who we're going to back.
It's a huge, huge theme this year, which I find really interesting, of surviving and survival and kind of like man, woman, solo, individual, their story of survival. Yeah. You know, you've got Robert Redford, you've got Tom Hanks in some ways,
Sandra Bullock,
you in some ways, even 12 Years a Slave, like this one man's survival.
Mm-hmm. In a weird way.
And the journey of a life. And,
in a weird way, Cate Blanchett in the Woody Allen movie too, right?
Absolutely. Like, that's you don't feel well for her. Like the rest of those, I can kind of, I haven't seen all of those.
But
films,
it's about
but
her
many,
desperately trying to survive.
Yes, desperately trying to survive. And it's just interesting, right, that like the past 5 to 8 years, and Dallas Buyers Club, you know.
Yep, trying to survive.
You know, trying to live, the will to live, you know, being such a powerful motivator. I mean, it makes for great drama, makes for great storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate story, right? But just how interesting, like what's happened in the past 7 or 8 years that story is so potent. And I think it's a story that, you know, look, it's a gay podcast, so I'll say it. I feel like it's a story that resonates to GLBT people in a really big way. And I think that that's, compelling. And I hope that we're out there making sure those stories are getting told. You know?
It was a fairly unqueer award show, though.
Yeah.
Like Jim Parsons did not win. I mean, was there an openly gay person who won an award tonight?
I think Megan Ellison, who's the big producer, the 28-year-old, I hope I'm not misquoting this, but I'm pretty sure she's a lesbian producer in Hollywood, and she did Zero Dark Thirty, and she was a part of American Hustle this year, and she may have had a hand in Gravity too. I don't know. She had a hand in a number of films that are all nominated this year.
Yeah, she's an interesting lady. But like Michael Douglas won for Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah.
And used the word mincing. Boo. Jared Leto won for Dallas Buyers Club and talked about his Brazilian wax.
Mm-hmm.
Boo. These are more serious issues than that, boys. Can we cut to the dignity here?
Yeah.
And We're back to the isn't it brave that this straight actor played a queer?
Yeah.
So while I enjoyed it, I'm loving a lot of the movies that are going on.
Yeah.
I personally, as the queer movie of the year for me, mm-hmm. is Her, which has no queer characters at all. But partly because
just it's so alternative and it's a new way of loving.
Yes, it's queer in its. It's queer in its alternativeness, right? Not that it's not a heterosexual love affair, but it can't even really be considered a heterosexual love affair because she's
not a human being.
So for me, my money was on that.
Yeah.
In a weird way, just because it was such there was a weird outsider quality to it that I enjoyed.
Well, we're going to talk about the Golden Globes, who looked hot, who did not, who won, who should have won. Who we disagree on. Yes, we've got a couple of those.
We do. Let's talk about that.
That's very exciting. So we're going to talk about that. And Mitchell and I, we watch these things, and then we experience life together, and then we're like, you do not believe that.
No way, you don't like her.
No way, you don't like that person?
She
How
looked
can
horrible.
You hate that film? I love that film. And then, you know, and then we cry.
And then we cry about it. I did just cry. What did I cry about?
I don't know.
Was it about?
It was very cute. It wasn't Woody Allen. I don't know. It was something.
No, I think it was Leonardo talking about Scorsese.
I think so.
Yeah.
You're a softie.
I am.
I love you so much. All right. We're going to be back after the GLPT news and what's going on in the theater as the theater scene is heating up for the winter theater season. And the Mitchell and I are back on the Golden Globes on the couch.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said the federal government will recognize the same-sex marriages performed in Utah before the U.S. Supreme Court called a halt to them on January 6th. Utah's governor said he would not recognize the marriages, 1,360 of which were performed after a lower court judge ruled Utah's ban on the marriages unconstitutional.
Clay Aiken, congressman, the former American Idol runner-up, is considering a challenge to Representative Renee Elmers, a Republican from North Carolina, in the 2nd congressional district of that state. Aiken, who came out as gay in September 2008, has spoken out about politics in recent years, focusing mainly on gay rights issues.
Robert W. Wilson, an openly gay retired hedge fund founder who became a major philanthropist, donating about $600 million to causes that included environmental conservation, the ACLU, and Roman Catholic education, although he was an atheist. He died December 22, 2013, in Manhattan at the age of 87. He was found dead in a courtyard at the San Remo building on Central Park West. Authorities said he left a note indicating that he had leapt to his death. Wilson had suffered a stroke last June.
The Mountain State Conference, or MSC, has approved a license for a woman who will become the Mennonite Church USA's first openly gay pastor. In its decision to grant Rhoda Good a license, the MSC emphasized with those who disagreed with its decision, but said that it felt it had acted in a way consistent with its Christian values.
The United Services Automobile Association, USAA, will offer insurance coverage to people who had previously been denied after their same-sex Massachusetts marriages to eligible policyholders ended. Same-sex marriages became legal in Massachusetts in 2004 when USAA still based spousal eligibility on the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, recognizing only heterosexual marriages.
Even though New Mexico has approved marriage equality, the sovereign Navajo Nation, whose borders spill into the northeastern part of the state, such unions are banned. However, some Navajo hope to change that. The Dine Marriage Act, which the Navajo Nation Council passed in 2005, defines marriage as being between a man and a woman and declares polygamy, unions between family members, and same-sex marriages void and prohibited. However, it would take an action by the Navajo Nation Council to repeal the act.
Utah's Weber State University says it will extend insurance benefits to spouses of employees in same-sex marriages. The university's announcement follows U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby's ruling striking down Utah's ban on same-sex marriage.
In California, organizers behind the Tet Parade, an annual tradition in Orange County's Little Saigon that celebrates the Vietnamese New Year, have voted to include an LGBT group to march in the festivities. Having openly LGBT people in the event has been a tense issue for several years.
The Advocate compiled its list of the U.S.'s 15 gayest cities, and among them, Pittsburgh, Orlando, Florida, Arlington, Virginia, Salt Lake City, Utah, Atlanta, Georgia, and Seattle, with Washington, D.C. taking the top spot.
The Colorado legislature opened recently with two gay lawmakers, House Speaker Mark Ferrandino and Senate President Pro Tem Lucia Guzman, leading their chambers. It marks the first time that any state legislature has had two gays in the top spots in both chambers.
State Delegate John Cardin has introduced a bill that would ban ex-gay conversion therapy to minors in Maryland. This bill will include gender identity and expression. State Senator Rich Madaleno is expected to introduce the measure in the Senate.
In world news, a former World Cup player from Germany has become the biggest name in soccer to come out as gay, saying he wants to break down the stigma of homosexuality in sports. Thomas Hitzlsperger, 31, who played in England's Premier League and in Germany, made the announcement 4 months after his retirement from the game.
Nigeria's Jail All the Gays bill may still not have passed to President Goodluck Jonathan for his signature, signaling possible delays before he signs the measure after it was passed December 18, 2013. It adds to the country's criminalization of homosexuality, which already sees harsh jail penalties and the death penalty in northern states.
In Hong Kong, people who have undergone a full gender reassignment surgery will soon be able to wed according to their new gender if proposed amendments to the city's marriage laws go according to plan. In its clearest signal yet on what action the government will take following last July's landmark ruling on marriage for a male to female transgender person, known only as W, the Secretary for Security extended the court's final appeal ruling by widening the order to include post-operative female-to-male individuals.
A gay man appears to have been thrown in a ditch after he was raped and murdered in Italy. Daniele Fiuli, 28, was found dead on the banks of the Tiber days after the alleged attack.
In entertainment news, former Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey has alleged he was released before the season as a result of being outspoken in support of same-sex marriage and was a victim of anti-gay remarks by Vikings special team coordinator Mike Prefer. Cluey said he didn't approach the team, the NFL, or the Players Association about Prefer's comments at the time because doing so is something that ends careers. Prefer has denied Cluey's allegations. Law firm Clayton Halunin, in conjunction with the National Center for Lesbian Rights, will represent Cluey.
Pop star Ricky Martin is back on the market. The singer and his longtime boyfriend, Carlos Gonzalez Abela, have called it quits.
GLAAD has named the character Bill from the PS3 video game The Last of Us among its most intriguing LGBTI characters of 2013. Others mentioned in GLAAD's list were the film Blue is the Warmest Color, the Fox comedy Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which features a gay police captain, ABC Family's The Fosters, the British drama Last Tango in Halifax, the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, BBC America's Orphan Black, and stand-up comic Josh Thomas's live show, Please Like Me.
Robin Roberts discussed her longtime girlfriend, massage therapist Amber Lagan, for the first time on Good Morning America, January 6th. Roberts came out publicly in December on the show. She said, I have never been happier or healthier than I am right now. And my year-end post was just full of gratitude and just telling everyone all that I'm grateful for, including my girlfriend, Amber, who really loved me through a difficult year.
Transgender Orange is the new black star Laverne Cox enlightens Katie Couric on a recent appearance on Couric's show. Couric asked about the media preoccupation with surgery and genitalia and used transgenders as a noun, a no-no in the trans community. I do feel there is a preoccupation with that, said Cox, who appeared with fellow trans entertainer Carmen Carrera. The preoccupation with transition and surgery objectifies trans people, and then we don't get to really deal with the real lived experiences, to which she included violence, discrimination, and unemployment.
Iconic actress, comedian Lily Tomlin married writer Jane Wagner, her partner of 42 years, in a private ceremony in L.A. on New Year's Eve. Wagner, 78, and Tomlin, 74, reportedly met when Tomlin was looking for a collaborator to help develop the character of the wicked child, Edith Ann.
And the TV film version of the Tony Award-nominated Broadway revival of Horton Foote's The Trip to Bountiful, starring Tony and Emmy Award winner Cicely Tyson, will air on Lifetime February 22nd as part of Black History Month programming. The cast also features Vanessa Williams and Blair Underwood. And that's the Weekend News brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, this is Pan Man speaking. Fasten your seatbelts, frequent flyers. You're flying the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
queer,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 13th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Pride Films and Plays presents what many consider to be the first gay play, Lillian Hellman's classic tale of love and lies, The Children's Hour. Written in 1934, it is as timely today as when written. See The Children's Hour, playing now through February 9th at Collaboration, 1579 North Milwaukee. For tickets, visit brownpapertickets.com. Lifeline Theater proudly presents the 17th Annual Filet of Solo Festival, Chicago's premier celebration of solo performance, storytelling, and live lit. Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, now through January 19th at many venues in Rogers Park. For more, visit lifelinetheater.com. Tap dance your way to the Paramount Theater in Aurora for the hit Broadway production, 42nd Street. Don't miss classic hits We're in the Money, Lullaby of Broadway, and of course, 42nd Street, directed by Rachel Rockwell. Playing now through February 9th at the Paramount in Aurora. For tickets to 42nd Street, visit ParamountAurora.com. Steppenwolf Theater presents Tribes by visionary playwright Nina Rain. The only deaf member of a cheerfully combative family searches to be heard in the stimulating play the Wall Street Journal called the most daring and funniest new play in recent years. Tickets start at just $20. Visit steppenwolf.org. Tribes is playing now through February 9th. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com. Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller, post a comment at WindyCityQueercast.com.
The sea wants to kiss the golden shore. The sunlight warms your skin. All the beauty that's been lost before wants to find us again. I can't fight you anymore. It's you I'm fighting for. The sea throws rocks together, but time leaves us polished stones. We can't fall any further if we can't feel ordinary love, and we cannot reach any higher if we can't deal with ordinary love.
So the Golden Globes this year, I feel like there were some surprises and some not surprises, but let's just be shallow and start there.
Start, okay. We're gonna start about clothes?
Yes, let's just talk about
shallow.
Who looked hot.
Point.
Yeah, let's talk about who looked hot, who did not, and you know, what you're going to, what your takeaway is going to be.
Amy and Tina looked fabulous.
Yes, they were fabulous and they were funny. And to me, that's, it's sexy, I mean, that when you're whole, fabulous and funny.
Their whole opening jokes were so, I mean, you can't even call it a monologue because it was two people talking. It was so good.
So good.
That joke laid at the very, one of their last jokes, one of the last jokes of the evening when they said, let's welcome like the vagina of a supermodel, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, let's give a warm welcome.
Let's give a warm welcome.
Let's give the warm welcome like a supermodel's vagina to Leonardo DiCaprio.
So brilliant.
I love it when they talked about Gravity and said the only the movie that George Clooney would rather float away into outer space than actually play opposite a woman his own age. That was so,
so
good.
Funny.
That was
but
so
I thought
good.
They looked great. I thought Emma Stone was the worst dressed.
Okay, we're going to conflict about her. I don't know that I didn't think she was the best dress. Wait, can I go back, though, and say I loved that Amy and Poehler did welcome us in, women and gay men, watching the Golden Globes.
Yeah, Amy and Tina, yeah.
Amy and Tina. Emma Stone, we had a huge argument over Emma Stone. Not Belle, how she was dressed. But I had no idea that you didn't like her.
I don't like her.
I love her.
I don't believe a word she says. I hate that as a professional actor, she has such a terrible speech impediment that she can't get rid of. Now, I have nothing against people with speech impediments, but actors work very hard. One of our skill sets is our voice.
Okay, but wait a minute. Drew Barrymore has the same one.
She does not.
She does.
No, she just has a weird. She just has a weird speech.
Yes, but it's the
Emma
same.
Emma Stone has a speech impediment, which, like I said, nothing against people with speech impediments, but like it's always the same. So I never believe her as anybody.
Yeah.
I never believe her as anybody but Emma Stone because it's always the same.
I don't know, though, because then you could say, like, Christopher Walken. Plenty of people have very specific...
Except I believe her because he can act. I mean, I believe him because he can act.
I love Emma Stone. We were sitting here with a couple of other people, and, you know, it's
she's
funny
because we couldn't believe
that you didn't like Crazy Stupid Love, which
I adored. The
worst
movie in the last 20 years.
No, see, I loved that movie. I thought it was one of the most charming little morsels of a delicious little comedy.
Bad.
Oh, it was such the perfect summer comedy.
It could have been.
You shocked us all.
It's one of the worst. It's one of the worst scripts I think I've literally seen in a movie.
It's because you're a comedy genius, and the rest of us aren't.
Well,
and we don't understand that the setups are all, you know, premeditated.
It was so obvious. Everything about it was obvious. I didn't believe a word of it.
But I thought. Disagree.
But more than anything, her outfit was. The top looked like a weird old lady's lampshade. The bottom looked. Like a ripped coffee filter.
Yeah,
she
it was
like
not
a,
good.
She looked like an idiot. Her hair was a weird color. Her makeup was too harsh.
It was not good.
You liked Paula Patton's dress. I thought she looked...
I thought Paula Patton looked like she came for a big night, and I loved it, and I thought it was at least... It was clean. It was high fashion. It was very modern. It was very different. There was a look tonight that seemed to indicate... something very Art Deco, very 1920s, almost like this stained glass look in Elizabeth Moss's dress,
yeah,
which was gorgeous.
Yeah, we like that.
And also Kate Beckinsale's dress. Yeah. I even think, even though we didn't think her styling was great, Laura Dern's dress had that kind of almost Art Deco, Arte look about it.
I loved
it.
Her dress. Her makeup was too harsh, too.
Yeah. I think it's odd for us to see Laura Dern not being a true blonde, too. But it was also the evening of the side boob with... Robin Wright and
we saw her. We saw her boob tape.
But then with Naomi Watts, had it all in
flawless.
Good and looking flawless.
Naomi
and
Watts looked flawless. I thought. I thought. Let's go back to Paula Patton's dress. I thought Paula Patton looked like she was wearing a tight, shiny pillowcase, and then threw a dust ruffle on her shoulder.
My friend Todd in Memphis would say it was just knotted sheets. You can make a window treatment out of just knotted sheets.
It looked like knotted sheets. It looked like she had stolen an outfit from a 1970s LaBelle concert when they played.
It is a little LaBelle. Why you gotta hate the LaBelle?
No, I love LaBelle, but they were wearing costumes. They were wearing deliberate.
I don't know.
Costumes.
I kind of dug it. I just kind of dig it because I don't want it all to be so pretty and. I don't exactly want it to be a swan draped around somebody's neck like Bjork, even though that's fun for the talk.
Right.
But it was one I thought, oh, that's a striking, you're trying to do something.
I didn't like it.
I thought Amber Heard, the bisexual actress Amber Heard, was probably
stunning.
One of the prettiest of the night.
I thought Julie Louis-Dreyfus looked
flawless.
She
was between the two beautiful boys from Chicago Fire, in case you don't know who Amber Heard is, folks.
Fabulous.
Helen Mirren, the Mirren.
Stunning.
And that green, she looked gorgeous. And And, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street gal, I don't even know her name.
Oh, my
just,
gosh.
Can I just call
either.
Her, can I just call her Wolf?
Yeah, the Wolf.
Wolf.
Of Wall Street. I thought Emma Thompson looked stunning.
She did look. She was getting schnookered all night, but man, she was having a fun
party. Oh, my
gosh,
I think she was wasted by the end. She was a blast. Like, every time you could see her in the background,
she threw Manolo Blahniks.
She was howling at laughter about something. She was like, she was doing that.
She
sort
was
of
like,
drunk
the soles
slap.
Of these red shoes are my blood. And then she throws her Blahniks.
There was a
her
lot
$1,500 pair of shoes over her shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot. That's what Jerry said. Like, that's $1,500
yeah.
on the floor.
She walks out without any shoes.
There was a lot of, because of Amy and Tina setting that bar, mm-hmm. there was a lot of discussion about or comment about women, mm-hmm. not just women in film, but women, I think sometimes because men still run Hollywood,
yep.
are afraid to carp,
yep.
right? They're afraid to gripe, right? But recently, Emma and Meryl,
yep.
It was in the news, they did some seriously public griping. Although, as it turns out, a lot of Meryl's assertions about Walt Disney are not necessarily true. Not that he was a saint, but
right.
that's besides the point. So, but because Amy and Tina
uh-huh.
opened with some griping.
Uh-huh.
some legit griping.
Yeah.
Women, and this was a particularly strong year for women, I think.
Yeah, very.
Comparatively.
I thought it was a more obvious year for men and actually some challenging categories for women.
And think about this as far as a year for women. My friend Sheila O'Malley is a film critic for RogerEbert.com. She pointed out, and I thought it was very interesting, that... Sandra Bullock's work mm-hmm. and success in Gravity is multi-leveled. It's not just that she's a favorite Hollywood actress in a big, splashy
right.
film. It's that she's a woman over 40
right.
opening a film mm-hmm. in which she's really the only thing in it. George Clooney's in it, but it's mostly her.
She probably passes the Bechdel test, which they call the Alison Bechdel test,
today, yes.
which is Alison Bechdel, the cartoonist and novelist and award-winning. Fun Home is her musical. That was just on Broadway. She has this whole test about women in film, and if you pass the Bechdel test about
right.
are you playing opposite a man,
right.
do you die? Well,
are there two women? This is a test. It's threefold. Are there two women in your film?
Right.
Then you get a pass. Do the two women talk to each other?
Mm-hmm.
And that's two. And three, when they talk to each other,
mm-hmm.
are they talking about men?
Mm-hmm.
So those three are the tests. But to finish my point about...
go ahead, sorry.
But then also Sheila made a really interesting point about the Bechdel test too, was with Gravity, not only is it a woman of a certain age opening a film, but it's an adventure film. Mm. It's an action mm-hmm. film, which that's big.
Yeah.
That's new. And so Sheila would reference sort of Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, who had very, 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 very long careers. But at the end of their careers, they were playing... axe murderesses and mm-hmm. grotesques and stuff like that, particularly Joan. And what they went through allows someone like Meryl Streep to open a film, or Judi Dench to open a film, or Sandra Bullock, whose other big hit film this year was The Heat with Melissa McCarthy, in which there is really very little romance in that movie. And it's really about two ass-kicking ladies being funny and taking...
Yeah,
you know, not to, you know, fucking kicking
like
ass and taking names.
Cagney and Lacey.
That is a quantifiable, if that's a word, shift.
Absolutely.
And then so then Sheila's point about the, because I asked her about the Bechdel test, and one of the things she said was, she said it, the reality is that started as a joke, that started as a bit. But some people have taken it very seriously. And Sheila's like, it is to be taken seriously, but Sheila then went on to point out that she loved The Wolf of Wall Street, and it fails the Bechdel test on almost every level.
Yeah.
On almost every
doesn't
level.
Mean that it can't be a good film if it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. It's just like
an
interesting way to see a woman's place in Hollywood or in film or in the stories of women that get told and the images of them that get perpetuated, which The Wolf of Wall Street has none, I don't think, that are redeeming
that one
for
gorgeous
women.
Woman, right?
But I don't think it's a woman redeeming character. I don't think any of them are redeeming. I haven't seen that film, so...
But so the point that you were making about the women being represented tonight, and that I think that there's some cultural shift in which women are allowed to be a little snarky about it. I think in the past women will, you know, Meryl Streep certainly, because she's sort of untouchable in that way,
and she's now gone into that mother role, like
mother role.
Mother
but also
of
she's
Hollywood
still a woman
role.
of over 60 who can open a film. I mean, that just didn't exist. She's she's changing it.
Yes.
But she can say something snarky about roles for women in film, you know?
Yes.
But to have other women be a little bit snarky about it or draw attention to it, I think there's been a fear in the past because men still cast.
Yeah.
And when they cast films, Gina Davis, this was Gina Davis's thing. If you look at any film, if you watch a crowd scene, it's only 17% women.
Mm.
The average in films, in crowd scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Just regular crowd scenes, not crowd scenes where it's supposed to be mostly men. Just a crowd scene, 17%. Somehow Hollywood thinks 17% is half.
Yeah. Well, and probably because whatever the film's about, the crowd is probably a scene like a car race or a bullfight or a boxing match or a, is probably arenas in which men are more there. I mean, you know, they're going to put outer space. It's going to be more men, they're going to think. They're not real crowd scenes, you know, authentic crowd scenes, or you would have women.
Well, that's, was what David said. Like, why don't we... you know, while you're writing a film, look at your characters and change any of the ones that you can from male to female or female to male. See what happens to your film. See what happens if that plumber or that cop or that judge or... I mean, it happens on TV, you know, where you'll see Linda Hunt as a judge on Law & Order years ago or what's that fabulous woman's name? She plays the captain on... it's not on an SVU... Oh, she's an African-American actress.
Oh, I don't know.
African-American actress. Anyway, she's fabulous. But
C.H. Powder?
No, not C.C.H. Powder, who I also love.
C.C.H. Powder?
But not so much in film, right? Where it's still the doctor's a guy, the judge is a guy.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I do think there's starting to be a little shift with that, with some, like, when you're just mentioning judges, so my head goes, like, The Good Wife. I do feel like they're so conscious of so many, there's so many great female roles on that show, which is amazing. And I do think there is some sort of shift happening. I mean, obviously tonight felt a little, I don't know, it felt a little like a celebration of women because...
Because of Amy and Tina.
Because of Amy and Tina, because of a number of the films, because of, you know, even giving Woody Allen the Cecil B. DeMille Award, you know, you really, and having Diane Keaton, who is just everything. She's just
everything.
She is everything.
She made a very good point about she listed a number, I can't remember what it was, but how many roles he's written for powerful women over the years. And when you think of all the women, Mira Sorvino,
like
Diane Wiest has won two Oscars, Mira Sorvino's won one, Diane Keaton has an Oscar for...
Hershey, didn't she win or was nominated?
Mia Farrow, I'm sure. I mean, the number of people, number of women who have gotten Oscar nominations and major successes has two Oscars from Woody Allen because of Woody Allen's films, despite what we think of him. And
And I was sitting there thinking, you know, it's really funny. I didn't voice this while we were sitting watching it, but I was thinking they shot some image while she was, Diane Keaton was talking about women and you know, all the great roles and how complicated and messy and strong and vulnerable. And he just lets them be so complex. He just writes women so well and gives them such opportunity. And I thought, thank God for him, because they shot out in the audience. And there was Julia Roberts sitting with Meryl Streep. And I thought, Meryl Streep's never been in a Woody Allen movie.
She has.
She has? Manhattan.
One of her early ones.
Yes.
One of her early movies.
Yeah. But I mean, she's never as Meryl Streep, and I'm doing air quotes, been in a Woody Allen movie the way Diane Wiest or, you know,
Diane
or
Keaton.
Cate Blanchett. I mean, I guess Diane Keaton was kind of founded. But yes, these, besides Annie Hall, when she made, you know, Diane Keaton early on was new, you know, but she had another opportunity, right? She had other opportunities. Whereas Meryl Streep did Manhattan. She was really young in her 20s and hasn't done anything. And I thought, you know, you do kind of wonder, like, would she want to? Would she have wanted to? You got to think she would have had opportunities. But I just thought that was interesting that, like, thank God, because Meryl Streep's getting all those roles, that he's kind of written roles for all these other women for us to kind of get to see them be kind of, I mean, and now when you have... The Cate Blanchett's and the Scarlett Johansson and the Penelope Cruz and those women doing, you know, his movies now.
Emma Stone is in the next one.
And Emma Stone's the next one. Maybe she'll turn your... I think she, to me, is like a young Keaton. I mean, I think she is that young, kind of goofy, smart, strong, very... To me, she does feel
she
doesn't feel that
to you. She does not have the talent to tie Diane Keaton's necktie.
Well, we will see. We'll see. I mean, the movie's not out, and his are not all hits, but they're all interesting.
They are always interesting.
Always, always interesting. But, you know, I do think it was, it's really interesting that you say that it was really a night where, to me, gay subject matter did have the spotlight, but all being played by heterosexuals.
Directed by, played by.
Yeah, and with Behind the Candelabra winning a lot. And I do think that it was a brave performance from Michael Douglas. Odd and complex and messy and exposed.
I think it was a great performance.
And I think Matt Damon, too, was...
I think Matt Damon's performance was
braver.
Is
very brave.
I thought,
I think Michael Douglas knows that, and he's kind of given right. He's kind of given Douglas, right kudos to Matt Damon. All
I think
along.
I think Michael Douglas did a brilliant imitation. His acting was great. I have no. That's not the issue. The issue was for me was a little bit of the tone, and this continuing thing about how brave it is when straight actors play gay guys. It's like, okay.
I don't think Douglas thinks he was brave, though. I really don't.
No, I'm not saying he did.
Other
I'm
people
saying that
may
there's
think
this,
so, yeah.
There's this build-up in Jared Leto. It's so brave. Is it brave for a pretty straight boy to play a girl, a transgendered woman, who then dies? I mean, is it so brave?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that brave?
I don't know.
Marines are brave.
I think it's courageous to play any vulnerable, messy character on stage and possibly fail.
Yes, if
gloriously.
We're talking about acting. I mean, that's sort of not the tone that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about. Sure, it's courageous to expose yourself and be emotional, but that's true anytime.
Right.
Any
human being is
vulnerable,
whether
especially
it's captured
artists.
On celluloid
right.
or not.
But as an artist, but the idea that there's a special kind of brave for a straight guy who plays.
Yeah.
A queer.
I don't believe that. I mean, we don't believe that, but mainstream society might really believe that. And we live a bit in a bubble.
My thing is, I thought we were
think,
over it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we are, but I think that I will say that if I can go back to 2.5 years ago when I first heard that Michael Douglas and then I heard Matt Damon was going to be playing his lover, I thought, huh, that's quite shocking. And I don't know why I thought it was shocking, but I still today think he didn't need to do that part. He obviously wanted to do that part, you know, and that part could have not been
Damon?
What it was without Matt Damon in that role.
Yeah, I thought, I mean,
when we
talked about it originally on the podcast, I was saying that I thought that it was Matt Damon's movie.
Yeah, I agree.
In that...
because it was based on the book of
right.
that character.
And it's his journey that we watch.
Correct.
Liberace stays the same. He's the same person.
Yes.
Right? Whereas Matt Damon's character is the one who goes on the journey. And I think...
As he said, Michael said it's less flamboyant, meaning you have less sequins
right,
than
he said,
me.
Right. The only reason why you're not up here is because I had more sequins.
Yeah. Which is true.
It is true. I think that you're right. And Liberace was famous and this guy was not. But I think Diane Keaton's speech about Woody Allen was amazing. I love that Cate Blanchett won.
I do love
that both Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto won for an
too.
Indie film. That's great. I love that.
And I love that it's obviously a project that he had so much passion that the people who wanted to make that film, and I don't know a ton about the history of that film, but just based on his speech, it sounds like they were trying to make that film for quite a while.
Quite a while.
And you know, he said something about I'm so glad for the people who passed, and it was definitely he was transformative in that part. I really thought
the acting is fantastic.
And I was thinking when Jared won, I thought, if he's going to win, then I think that McConaughey should win because I thought he was equally as good as Jared Leto.
As we discussed, one of the interesting things about the Golden Globes is that they really have no artistic merit.
Right.
The Golden Globes are picked by a group of 90 foreign correspondents who don't even necessarily come from reputable papers. It's not like it's 90 Roger Eberts.
Right.
It is not. It is somebody who writes for some blog or some paper and they belong to this. It's a little bit like the Jeff Awards. It's like they love the theater and then they, you know, go to work at their dentist office or whatever. We're not talking about the great critics of the foreign press.
Right.
That's not who we're talking about. So these awards...
But they're different perspectives, I think, which is cool because the only good thing is that they're not all American.
Right. Well, the thing
which
is
the only thing that gives it some credence.
Yes. Well,
even though they all do
but
look
it's
at
a popularity,
us like,
it's a popularity
sure.
contest. And,
well, speaking, aren't they all?
Speaking to I spoke to a gentleman today who worked in the entertainment industry for a good 25, 30 years as an entertainment reporter. And he said that, you know, it's about getting access to stars.
Sure.
And so if you have a small indie film, you're going to make yourself accessible to a luncheon with the guy from the, you know, blog in Prague.
Yeah.
So
the reality is the Oscars are no different. They campaign. If you don't campaign, your award doesn't get done.
Except they're voted on by artists.
Unless you're Polanski and frickin' Woody Allen, you can campaign.
But they're voted on by artists.
Yeah.
Whereas these are not voted on by artists. I do love the pomp and circumstance, which is why I call it the playoffs and not the... It's not the big game, right? But it is interesting how it does affect the Oscars, right? Because Oscar nominations come out next week or the week after. And
these are very influential.
They are. Not so much in the nominations, but like who people in the community are going to vote for. Like, I think Jared Leto's slightly pretentious speech. Mm-hmm. He probably will be nominated because that's probably already decided. But unless he redeems himself in some sort of way, which I don't think he's interested in, which is fine. I think
he'll lose it to Bruce Stern or somebody else.
I think he did just lose the Best Supporting Actor Oscar because it was a little bit pretentious and it was all about how glorious that you received me after I took 6 years off as a gorgeous, rich, white guy who plays in a band. And thank you for receiving my art. It was gross. I mean, I'm sure his work was fantastic, but his speech was gross.
Yeah. I don't know. I think sometimes I feel like it's, you know, it's so great because it's so wonderful to see an artist whose work you really admire get on stage and make a great, gracious speech, and it's inspiring. And we remember those moments with the people who give great speeches, right?
Yeah.
You know, throughout the years, whether it be the Tony or the Oscars or the Golden Globes. But it is a whole lot to there. It is a weird kind of unfair expectation because I think these are people who literally you give me lines to say.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And so it is hard. I don't want to throw them all against the, you know.
But to play devil's advocate to that, Amy, it's a business.
Absolutely.
There's one thing to be an actor.
But some of them have dumb luck. You know, they're pretty or they're whatever, right, and they're in the right place at the right time.
But that's the business. That's the skill of being. Here's the deal. There's a difference between an actor or an artist, and it's another thing to be a movie star or a person in the movie industry. That is a different job, and get good at it because there's somebody else who will take your place who's just as talented, who will know how to do it right.
I agree. I'm just saying there are some people, like, I mean, even like Hoffman and De Niro, they can't speak their ways out of a bag, you know, at these awards things when they win them. But they're brilliant freaking actors.
But especially De Niro. But they're always elegant and they say the right thing.
Does not say the right thing. He can't mumble his way through four sentences when he gets these awards, but he's brilliant.
I disagree.
I'm not comparing Jared Leto with...
He mumbles through them, but what he says is terse and on the money. Let's talk about the biggest star of the night, though. Botox.
There was
so much shiny forehead, and not just the women. There was a lot of shiny forehead, even from women you wouldn't expect it from. I mean, it was amazing to see Jacqueline Bisset, as sort of out there as she was, looking like a woman of a certain age and stunning.
I love Jacqueline Bisset. I loved her.
Also, can we talk about Andy Samberg's skin?
Yeah, he's beautiful. I mean, he's 24, isn't he? He's so young.
I just didn't know because you have this HDTV. His skin is flawless. He has the creamiest, most beautiful skin in Hollywood.
But so is Rob Lowe's. And he's like...
152 years old.
You know what's crazy? The first time I got this HD television, I came home. Kelly Simpkins and I were here. And we turned on the television. And I will never forget. We were watching... I won't say the show, but we were watching some television show and all of a sudden we were like, oh my God, her skin is horrible. And this is a beautiful woman, beautiful woman. She had horrible skin. We were like, oh my God. And then right after that show came on Brothers and Sisters and Rob Lowe was there. And I went, oh my God. And Kelly went, what? And I said, he is as pretty in HD as he is. And it's when you like start saying he's so freaking pretty.
I saw a clip of a movie of his.
Oh God, he's
I was
so
flipping
pretty.
Through the channels and there was a little bit of some movie. I think it was like Young Blood where he played a hockey player. And he's just there in a jockstrap, lucky me. But he was so young. He was so pretty.
He's so pretty.
He's still pretty.
He's so pretty. Robert Downey Jr. is obviously just fermented. He just looks beautiful. It's like something
I think
happened.
He had a little Botox, but he looks fantastic.
He may have had a little facelift too, but and some eyes
if
or
he,
something.
If
but he
did,
looks
it's
good.
On, it's
Sandra Bullock has the best plastic surgeon in Austin, Texas, and I should go down and hang out in
she
Texas.
She clearly does because she's
although she laughed so hard at like some joke, it was something about gravity. It wasn't the George Clooney floating away, but it was one of those jokes. And she laughed so hard, and it was like her between like the bridge of her nose. It was fighting so hard to like let it laugh, but her forehead was not moving at all.
There was so much. But I mean, I guess I've this been Botox for years, but tonight was particularly egregious.
You can really see it on this on the HD. Yeah,
it's a Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah,
she couldn't even move her face.
Yeah. It's a lot. Can we hop over just real quickly here at the end about television? Because I'm a television nut. And just about some of the categories there. Well, you've definitely mentioned Andy Samberg, but I think his Brooklyn Nine-Nine and the show I'm not watching. And really,
is anybody watching?
I don't know, but that's pretty amazing. And we did mention Jacqueline Bisset, but I know both you and I, right when Monica Potter from Parenthood was nominated. I was so happy she was nominated.
I know,
that show
too.
Gets
it's
so overlooked
time.
And great year of her dealing with cancer and just.
I know it sucks that it takes a cancer
storyline
to have someone notice what beautiful work she's doing, because just her work as a parent to a difficult child.
Oh, so good.
And just having a relationship, I think her work is really beautiful.
Yeah. And interesting that, you know, Modern Family did not scoop up here. And I'm curious as to if that's because Modern Family is not. It doesn't speak to the Hollywood foreign press or what,
maybe.
But Sofia Vergara and the show and, you know, and her being the only one nominated, really, really interesting. Because I was really surprised by who were their actor comedy people. Not that Samberg won. I just was surprised by their actor comedy men. You know, there's so many great men on that show that I was kind of surprised that she was the only nominee. And Breaking Bad, we'll see who picks up that throne of Bryan Cranston, and I missed that whole show. Like, I just kind of, I don't mean that I didn't get it, I just never watched it, so I can't comment. One day.
Yeah, that's the great thing about
binge watching.
The world we live in right now, right?
Yeah.
Who else? Amy Poehler finally won.
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah,
Tina
she made out with
really
Bono.
Really happy about it for her.
It was great when Seth Meyers gave the award to Andy Samberg, because they're clearly friends.
Yeah.
And that was really beautiful, and I love those kinds of moments. That's my favorite things about award shows. Who wins and loses is fun to like guess on and win an Oscar poll and stuff. But really the fun of watching award shows for me is, besides the clothes, is like, oh my goodness, is Meryl Streep having a super adorable conversation with Julia Roberts right now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, what is Bradley Cooper saying to Leonardo DiCaprio? Mm-hmm. Wait, is Scorsese offering
somebody a
job? So I mean, like, I love those sort of fun interactions. I get that it's silly. I get that it doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, especially when there's so much craziness.
It's just a big party at the end of the year.
But it's
to
like
celebrate
for me, celebrity and celebrities is like comic books to other people.
Yeah,
it's just, you know what I mean.
But
it's
you know
fun.
What? Here's what I think. They gotta get the Jack Nicholson element back into the Golden Globes. And I know Amy and Tina were doing a really great job of, like, you know, their delivery was great. And they were great hosts. But we don't have that one rogue person that you just know that's going to be it for the night.
Right. There was no Robin Williams to, like, what the heck's he going to say or do?
Yeah.
Clooney wasn't there to be roguish in his own way.
Yeah. We needed that. We need that next year.
It was Tina and Amy.
Well,
because
they were saying stuff you can't believe they were saying.
I mean, the making fun of the... They made so much fun of the Hollywood foreign press right before the president came out.
Oh, my
it's
God.
Genius. Or the Miss Golden Globe. You know, it's always the daughter of some celebrity. Yeah. And this year it was Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon's daughter. And then they did a whole bit where...
Yeah.
Because always Miss Golden Globe is some starlet. And then Mr. Golden Globe was Amy dressed as Tina's fake son.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, who didn't know who her daddy was.
Made fun of
her baby daddy.
Right, and then Tina's like, well, he's here. Start looking around. And it made fun of the whole thing. It was so irreverent. I loved it.
Yeah.
They really won the night.
I think so.
And the thing I'm most happy about is Cate Blanchett, because I really want her to win the Oscar for
Blue
Jasmine.
Me too. Oh, I haven't even mentioned it, but I felt like it really, there was really a lot of attention to the ladies, as we talk about the Black Dole test and everything else and great women's roles in American Hustle, with kind of a sweep, Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence winning.
Oh, yeah,
And Jennifer Lawrence, I really thought she was fantastic in that. Personally, I liked her more in American Hustle than I liked her in Silver Linings Playbook.
Interesting.
And Amy Adams, I've been rooting for Cate Blanchett since the moment I saw Blue Jasmine. I was like, I've seen it. I kind of felt the same way I did when Marion Cotillard won.
Yeah.
I saw the film and I was like, that's it.
Yep.
She's got it.
I mean,
I don't care who else. I won't think that they should have won. And I felt that way seeing Cate Blanchett and Blue Jasmine, but I equally felt that way just a couple weeks ago, right around Christmas, when I went to go see American Hustle. I really just thought for Amy Adams, that was such, just such a game changer for me, for her as an actress. And I think she's a good actress, really good actress, and really quirky and unusual and honest. And
I liked her in her.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that yet. So.
She's fantastic. She's...
must be a very different role than what she plays in American Hustle.
It's so wildly different. She's so vulnerable and real and...
Bookish, right? I mean,
she's bookish, kind of, but really honest. And
yeah,
I think she's
that's
marvelous.
What she does. And so to see her do kind of the gloss and the style and also... the edge that this character needed and the sexuality this character needed, I thought, wow, you've got some facets to what you can pull out of your bag of tricks, and that's exciting to me. So we'll do it again next year.
Always.
You're gonna hit a boat here in the next couple weeks, but hopefully we'll get you on one more time before you head off. Maybe you can tell us about your show, and we'll get a little update. And next week, I hope to have Scott Duff on. He's got a new venture on the radio, talking about the gay stuff on Out Chicago. I'm gonna talk to him, and let you know what he's doing on Sunday mornings. And we just hope you have a good week, and the snow melts for us in Chicago, and.
I hope so.
And some sunny skies. We had sun today.
We did. It was lovely.
It's a good thing. Everybody have a great week. And cheers to this year's Golden Globes. Richard Knight Jr. will be on the show with me. We're going to be doing the Oscar predictions here in just a few weeks. So we'll see after the SAG Awards coming up this coming weekend. And now the Golden Globes. Who we think is going to take home Oscar in 2013-14.
Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett. We've signed that one up. Have a good day, everybody.
Bye. Let it go, let
it go. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Nicole never bothered me anyway.